Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, March 19th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho governor signs comprehensive Medicaid reorganization bill. Federal judge rules last year's Idaho library bill likely does not violate First Amendment and denies request for preliminary injunction. Idaho Senate committee passes anti-trans bill from Republican Representative Barbara Ehart of Idaho Falls that allows people to sue if trans people are allowed in dormitories, prisons, or domestic violence shelters. And 10th Circuit Court rules in favor of public land corner crossers. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report.
The World Meteorological Organization has confirmed 2024 as the hottest year on record in 175 years.
And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Idaho Governor Brad Little has signed House Bill 345 from Republican Representative Jordan Redmond that will move the state's entire Medicaid program to a third-party managed care organization that would allocate and oversee benefits if the federal government approves. The bill requires the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare to make requests to the federal government for a number of changes to the state's Medicaid system. If the federal government approves the waivers, the bill would end the current system of using value care organizations, which are led by physicians and hospital organizations, to manage benefits. The bill has a work requirement that requires Medicaid recipients between the ages of 19 and 64 to work 20 hours per week to be eligible. There are exceptions to the work requirement for caretakers responsible for children younger than six, parents or caretakers caring for a dependent with a serious medical condition or disability, those receiving unemployment compensation, those participating in a drug or alcohol treatment program, or those attending college, university, or vocational school at least part-time. House Bill 345 also requires participants to pay premiums and copays, similar to health insurance requirements under the Affordable Care Act. House Bill 345 would also end presumptive eligibility for people who arrive at a hospital who are likely eligible for Medicaid. It would also give the Idaho Health and Welfare Department director authority to cut costs if the federal government reduces payment matches on Medicaid expansion. Currently, the federal government pays 90% of expanded Medicaid, and the state pays the remaining 10%. Governor Little emailed a statement today saying, "We want Idahoans to become as self-sufficient as possible." House Bill 345 reinforces that goal while reasonably reeling in Medicaid spending so taxpayers are not overly burdened by this program in the out years. House Bill 345 is a huge improvement over a previous version that would have reversed voter-approved Medicaid expansion in 2018. The voters spoke loudly in 2018 with their votes, and as elected leaders, we must continue to respect that. I am pleased House Bill 345 improves the Medicaid program without rejecting the will of the voters on Medicaid expansion. Redmond's previous bill this session, House Bill 138, would have required the state and expanded Medicaid in 2026 if the Medicaid system did not meet 11 very strict conditions, including reducing expanded Medicaid enrollment from 98,000 presently to 50,000. During the hearings on the bill Governor Little signed today, healthcare advocates said they were concerned because the bill repeals hundreds of pages of administrative rules on Medicaid reimbursements that have taken 20 years to finesse. Those who advocate for those with disabilities say the bill erases all of the reimbursement rules for several important programs. Lawmakers in both chambers voted in favor of the bills, despite the overwhelming public testimony against the bills in committees. Idaho Democratic Party Chair Lauren Necochea released a statement today saying these so-called work requirements do nothing to help find jobs, but they will take away insulin, cancer treatment, and mental health services. Republicans are also inserting a profit-driven middleman into Medicaid through managed care, a reckless scheme that threatens to gut already overstretched disability support services. Because House Bill 345 has an emergency clause, it went into effect immediately when the governor signed it today. Federal Judge Amanda Brailsford has denied a request from a coalition of Idaho groups to stop enforcement of last year's library bill, House Bill 710, which went into effect last July. The plaintiffs include private Idaho schools whose libraries were included in the bill, plus parents. The lawsuit alleges the bill, which creates a system where the library can be fined if they do not remove a book someone complains about within 60 days, violates the First and 14th Amendment rights of private schools and libraries. Judge Brailsford denied a request to block the law's enforcement and dismissed some of the plaintiffs in the case. The bill is an attempt to restrict minors' access to library materials that relate to sex education, LGBTQ people, and ethnically diverse communities. Some librarians have left Idaho because of the attempt to criminalize their work. Right-wing Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador issued a statement to the Idaho Capital Sun saying, "I am pleased the court ruled that plaintiffs are unlikely to succeed on the merits of this case and are also unlikely to prove that Idaho's law protecting minors from harmful material in schools and public libraries is somehow unconstitutional. While the case itself was not dismissed, we will continue to defend Idaho's law as this process continues." Judge Brailsford wrote the plaintiffs in the case, quote, "have yet to show irreparable harm that justifies a preliminary injunction." The judge also wrote HB 710 does not prohibit a child, parent, or legal guardian's conduct and does not contain any enforcement provision applicable to them. Rather, the statute only prohibits the conduct of schools and public libraries and only provides for the enforcement of a violation against schools and public libraries. There was some concern over whether the new law applies to private schools and libraries. Judge Brailsford dismissed two private libraries as plaintiffs in the lawsuit, saying the law does not apply to them. Those were the Community Library in Ketchum and the Collister United Methodist Church Library in Boise, both of which are open to the public. And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.
The Idaho Senate State Affairs Committee today approved a bill from Republican Representative Barbara Ehart of Idaho Falls that limits transgender people from accessing certain spaces at universities, correctional facilities, and domestic violence shelters. The spaces include bathrooms and sleeping facilities. The bill allows people to sue the colleges or institutions if they encounter someone who is of the wrong gender in their facilities. The Senate sponsor of House Bill 264 was Republican Cindy Carlson of Riggins. Here's Representative Ehart introducing the bill in the Senate committee.
Before you, we have a piece of legislation that is following in the steps that Idaho has already taken great efforts to go, and that would be in ensuring the safety and the privacy and the dignity of our women. This one happens to encompass three areas. That would be our women's prisons, and I think it's important to note that according to our director, we have 75 confirmed cases of gender dysphoria. So it would be in our women's prisons, our juvenile detention centers, domestic violence centers, and of course at the university level, in particularly targeting our university dorm rooms, so that a biological female doesn't find out when she goes to school and she's in her dorm rooms and she has to call mom and dad and say, my roommate is male. That's not fair.
Ehart brought in Alliance Defending Freedom legal counsel Sarah Beth Nolan to present the bill. The Alliance Defending Freedom is an Arizona-based Christian nationalist group.
They address in no way gender, but sex according to biology. And like I said, those have already been in state code. Those definitions of sex are inclusive, meaning that they encompass individuals that have a disorder of sexual development, also known as an intersex condition, that may cause that individual to develop abnormally. However, they are still male and female despite their disorder. And so those definitions include them as well. The bill will apply to correctional facilities, juvenile correctional facilities, domestic violence shelters, and public higher education facilities, university and community schools if they are public. The bill requires that those facilities designate each multi-occupancy restroom, changing room, and sleeping area for either males or females. And then those facilities must take reasonable steps. That's a legal standard that is used in several areas of the law to provide privacy for men and women in these spaces while they are using that designated area. Public higher education facilities also must make accommodations, so a girl would not be forced to have a roommate that is a male. But if for any reason someone is uncomfortable with using a space that is designated for their sex, that's multi-occupancy, those facilities can accommodate them as well. And then you'll see the cause of action. So a couple of things that must occur before the cause of action would be triggered. For restrooms and changing rooms, one of two things would have to occur. Either the facility gave someone explicit permission to use a multi-occupancy space that was designated for the opposite sex, or that facility failed to take reasonable steps to prevent an individual from violating the statute. For sleeping areas, it is triggered if someone is assigned to sleep overnight with someone of the opposite sex. 12 other states have laws on the books, just like this one. And so for constitutional purposes, what many federal courts have said about language like this is that the state has an interest in protecting privacy and safety in intimate spaces. And if the language is tailored to that interest, then it stands.
That was Sarah Beth Nolan of the Arizona-based Alliance Defending Freedom. The bill requires, quote, every restroom, changing room, or sleeping quarters within a covered entity that is designated for females or males shall only be used by members of that sex. No individual shall enter a restroom, changing room, or sleeping quarters that is designated for females or males unless such an individual is a member of that sex. That caught the attention of Democratic Senator James Rugde of Pocatello, who was the only committee member to vote against the bill.
The meat of the bill requires universities to designate these facilities as either male or female as defined in the statute. And under 67-9802 subparagraph 2, there is no permissive, or there is no allowance for the students to invite a male or female in. If a male or female goes into the room or even the bathroom of the dorm room that's designated for the opposite sex, they're in violation of this statute. I think this creates real problems for the universities. If we're going to allow for young men and young women to have opposite sex over, use their bathroom, use their bedrooms, then we better say it in the statute. Otherwise, this is the state getting into the bedrooms of college students.
That was Democratic Senator James Rugti of Pocatello. Rugti also said he has concerns about enforcement and wondered if police would ask invasive questions. 14 people testified in the Senate committee. 12 were opposed to the bill. Here are two women who were opposed to the bill, starting with Elizabeth Nelson.
Morning, committee. My name is Elizabeth. I live in Boise, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I'm here today to express my opposition to House Bill 264. I am a 30-something cis woman, and I'd like to state very clearly that I am comfortable sharing bathrooms and other facilities with trans women. Statistically, the demographic most likely to cause me harm is cis men, not trans folks. This bill lacks an enforcement mechanism that can open the door to invasive and gross tactics like genitalia inspections. Does BSU have a bathroom monitor, or is going to have to have a bathroom monitor checking the birth certificate and genitalia of each person who walks in simply to empty their bladder in a restroom? All of this to avoid civil actions from someone who thinks that another person isn't woman enough? Would my short hair be reason for question? What about my near constant wearing of men's shirts? Furthermore, this bill will also now force trans women into men's bathrooms where they may face disproportionate harassment. It will also force trans men who often have a full beard, flat chest, and other masculine features into a woman's restroom, which will cause confusion at best and harassment at worst. This bill does not protect me, and it targets and hurts my trans friends and neighbors. There hasn't been any examples of a problem that this bill is trying to solve. Therefore, this to me seems like government overreach and a waste of my tax dollars.
Committee, my name is Rachel Rojas. I've lived in Gem County for over 20 years. I've been an educator in Idaho for over a decade. I strongly oppose House Bill 264 for three key reasons. It does not protect women. It glosses over the intersex community, and it is too vague in application. Senators, did you watch the House committee hearing on this bill? Nearly every testimony except one was against it, as you're also hearing today. Thank you, Lily and Elizabeth. Many cisgender women, or what many of you call biological women, expressed grave concerns. This bill leads to discrimination against women who appear more masculine or men who appear more feminine. Take me, for example. I have short hair. I'm athletic. I rock climb. When I don't wear makeup or dress feminine, I have been misidentified as a man. Women do not feel protected or safe by this bill. Secondly, the bill fails to properly account for the intersex community. Ms. Nolan glossed over this lightly, but around 32,000 people in Idaho are born with physical traits that do not fit typical male or female definition. This occurs at birth. Biology, not just gender, exists on a spectrum. These are real intersex individuals. The refusal to properly acknowledge this community is deeply concerning. Lastly, when Representative E. Hart and Ms. Nolan were pressed in the House committee on this bill and how it would be enforced at the university level, they had no clear answer for broad terms like reasonable steps. This vagueness is alarming. I urge you to keep questioning how will this work at state educational institutions. This bill does not just address dorm rooms. The term restroom is used 8 times in this bill. These are very broad facility areas, so we cannot just gloss over that. This is in the bill. And senators, if the real focus is prisons and domestic violence shelters, then the bill should be amended to remove educational institutions entirely. It's too vague when we include that vaguely and we don't have proper definitions. So I'm pleased to hear that it is being considered for the 14th order for amendment, but I also highly urge the removal of educational institutions entirely. It is too vague and too broad.
House Bill 264 now heads to the Senate floor. The Senate State Affairs Committee voted on party lines to send House Bill 264 to the amending order on the Senate floor, in which senators may submit amendments to the bill to be voted on. Republican Representative Barbara E. Hart asked members to send it to the amending order to add clarification that male corrections officers could enter a facility designated for women and girls.
Community health workers such as doulas and medical translators play vital yet often overlooked roles in public health. In Oregon, efforts are underway to formalize and sustain the community health workforce. As trusted frontline workers, community health workers are embedded in their communities. Research shows they improve health outcomes by increasing access to preventative care such as cancer screenings. To strengthen this workforce, Oregon has partnered with PearSuite, a digital health company co-founded by Colby Takeda.
Our company is all about empowering them, supporting them with a software system that allows them to document all their activities, track the needs of individuals, track how they're getting support.
Oregon is one of 29 states that allow services by community health workers to be reimbursed by Medicaid. Data shows the skill sets are in demand, with jobs predicted to grow by 13% within the decade. Although the work of community health workers has largely been under the radar, the pandemic highlighted their value. Janine Smart with the Oregon Community Health Workers Association emphasizes their importance, especially for communities of color, immigrants, and refugees.
There are a lot of barriers for communities in accessing healthcare resources and having trusted information. And so being able to have a workforce that's already connected in community-based space has been pivotal.
PearlSuite provides support to help the health workers better understand contracts and process claims. Takeda says PearSuite supports organizations that have been doing healthcare work, such as screenings or providing resources to houseless people for decades, but have never been reimbursed by the healthcare system. He says organizations the company supports are making an average of $15,000 a month in extra income. This story was produced with original reporting by Ramona Schindelheim for Working Nation. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The 10th Circuit Court of Appeals has dismissed a civil suit against four elk hunters, reaffirming citizens' rights to corner cross between two tracts of public lands. Corner crossing is the practice of moving between two diagonally adjacent parcels of public lands, one or both of which are surrounded by private land on all sides. Corner crossing entails briefly entering adjacent private lands. The checkerboard pattern of public and private lands in some parts of the West has created the need for the practice of corner crossing. The checkerboard land patterns are a remnant of the railroad land grants of the mid-19th century. The appeals court's decision hinged on the Unlawful Enclosure Act of 1885, which prohibits private landowners from wholly preventing or obstructing the people's access to public lands enclosed by their private property. Technically speaking, the people's right to corner cross has been on the books for 140 years, but landowners have begun suing people who corner cross on their lands. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow Pullman area, there's 90% chance of rain tonight, possibly mixed with snow before 3 a.m. Low 34, breezy south winds 5 to 10, becoming southwest 15 to 20 after midnight with gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Total nighttime snow accumulation less than half an inch. Tomorrow, 80% chance of rain, possibly mixed with snow showers, mainly before 5 p.m. Some thunder possible. Snow level rising to 3,100 feet in the afternoon, high 46. Breezy west winds 10 to 20, gusts up to 30. New snow accumulation less than half an inch possible. Thursday night, 70% chance of precipitation. Chance of rain before midnight, then rain likely, possibly mixed with snow. Some thunder possible. Snow level 3,300 feet, mostly cloudy, low 36. West winds 5 to 10, becoming south after midnight, gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Little or no snow accumulation expected. And on Friday, there's an 80% chance of precipitation, a chance of rain, then showers and possibly a thunderstorm in the afternoon. Snow level 3,300 feet, rising to 4,400 feet in the afternoon, high 48. South winds 5 to 15, becoming southwest in the afternoon, with gusts up to 20. Up to a quarter inch of rainfall possible, except higher amounts possible in thunderstorms. Currently 45 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP. Be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. David Katz assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Flashpoints is up next, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. We'll have a lockdown mosh pit archive episode, 7:30 to 8:30, and music begins in earnest with Grateful Dead Through the Decades with Arlene, 8:30 to 11 tonight. Sounds of the Future is on live in the studios from 10 to 11. So stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP, Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. Available online at loveskombucha.com.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.